You are very welcome to Cawley's Call with me, Alan Cawley, powered by Benetti Menswear, a topical debate show covering all things Irish football, along with 1v1 interviews with top-class sports stars from a wide range of different sports.
It's me that's putting on the green jersey, me that's going to take flak from people to say, you're not even Irish. I was big enough to say, I'm going to take it.
There's many people I've spoke to, they always say, I used to put money on you scoring the first goal, but I've never seen any of that money, though.
And Andy, he says, I want the performances that I got from you in Scotland with the under-16s, not that rubbish that you gave me over in Oslo. Yeah.
Two.
Evening, everyone. It's good to see you all. And thanks a million for coming out. Obviously, this has been a long time in the planning. You've obviously listened to the show. We enjoy it immensely. We enjoy the league. We love the league. So it's great to be able to have a live event, obviously, with you tonight. Bit of crack, bit of slagging. It's not too serious, as you all know. Stewie's going to sing a few songs as well.
So I'm just looking everybody in the eye now just to make sure I don't get any stick.
There'll be a lot of stick. Shamrock Rovers fans here, where I show.
I'm trying to, trying to psych you out early doors.
Is Luke here? You behave now, Luke, or you'll be thrown out. So it's great to see you all. As I say, and thanks a million for obviously coming out and supporting us. But it's something that we did want to do when we put the podcast together. It's 2 years now, actually. I said to Stewie, we'll build up to a live event. He laughed at me, as he normally does. But here we are now. Obviously, COVID made us, for everybody, it obviously interfered last year that we couldn't have it. So the fact that we got the second series going this year and we were always mad keen to get the live show going. So lots of debate, lots of talk as usual. The boys will be coming on in a few minutes. But I think the most important thing here tonight is the fact that Stewie's going to sing a couple of songs. I'd say you're all looking forward to that, are you?
No heckling.
Bits of housekeeping first as well, obviously with COVID and the restrictions and the stuff that was announced yesterday, and we were afraid maybe it might put pay to the show, but thankfully it's not. But just in terms of the venue itself, if you're going to the toilet, make sure you're wearing a mask or anything like that. We were hoping to maybe put a microphone out to the floor as well to ask questions, but we're unable to do that. So we do have a Twitter handle, Cawley's Call Live. A couple of you have sent in a couple of questions as well. We're going to try and get to all those questions and make it as interactive as possible.
The room is intimate enough. I think if you want to ask a question, just shout it out.
Luke's not allowed to ask any questions. Everyone else is. If you want to, maybe later on when we get to the stage where we are asking questions, we'll try and get as many covered as the lads have sent in. But as Stewie said, if you want to put up your hand and ask a question to Stevie, Rory, Tim, and then Kenny and Keith later on, there's absolutely no panic with that. But before we get into everything, I suppose the most important topic at the moment is obviously Steve and Kenny, Irish football, everything that's gone on in the last week, which has been brilliant and lots of positive stuff. Few dinosaurs talking about not giving him a contract, but we won't go there tonight with them. But Stewie, tell me about, I suppose, the past week in terms of Stephen. We've discussed it many times on the show. We all know Stephen. But the whole contract situation, yes or no?
Will I be yes? Yeah, I would be yes after the Luxembourg game. Yeah. I'm trying to count how many claps I got there. But I've always been of the opinion that the Luxembourg game was a real sticker for me, you know, especially the one in the Aviva. Yeah. I felt that was probably us at our lowest. And they were a good side in Luxembourg, a very good side, worked very hard, played good football. But I think that was the game for me that I felt, is this really where we're at, like, you know? So,
but did you not feel it was always going to take that time?
Yeah, I did, yeah. And the difficulty was trying to, I mean, I would often get asked, you know, a lot of people would ask you, you know, how you feel about the whole situation. What does he have to do to get us playing? And he needed time, but it was trying to convince people that he needed time, you know, and trying to convince the broader footballing public that he needed time. And that's a difficult thing to do. But what I would say is that, you know, people are very well informed on the game. They're a lot more informed on the game than they were 20 years ago.
When you were playing.
But I'd have no qualms about asking anybody in this room about the game, technically, tactically, anything, because I think that there's so much information out there. You know, people, you know, analysis on TV, podcasts, radio. People have been listening to this stuff for a long period of time, and they get it. You know, so what I'm trying to get at is that you can't pull the wool over people's eyes. So you can just try to be honest. And I think the general public did get that he needed time. The only problem was, for me, there was an issue with the FAI, in that there was members of the FAI that didn't want him there. And they tried to, they tried to pull a fast one, obviously, with the issue over the video when we played England. There's that, and then there's the social media side of it. And because social media is so prevalent in the game now, so much shit can get out there. And
you love social media, don't you?
It's fucking desperate. It's the biggest plague. It's the biggest plague that we have there. But you have to put your faith in people in the end and say, please don't listen to that shit. Please make up your own mind. Watch the games. Watch what you're seeing with your own eyes and make up your own mind. And I think people have done that. Mm. And it's turned, right? It's turned because it's not a fluke anymore. Now, I mean, the last five or six games, the results have been very good. But performances,
you can see a shape on the team.
You can see a shape on the team now. We're much braver now. Certain players have just completely been transformed. Shane Duffy's the obvious one for me. So I think we're at a stage now where we're definitely... I think he's earned it, yeah, absolutely, yeah.
The general consensus in the room, obviously, judging by the clap, I presume you're all for Stephen and would like to see him get a contract as well? Yes. Yeah. And I'm the same. I would echo everything that Stewie said. And obviously, sometimes people think because of Stephen's background and maybe we have the League of Ireland blinkers on, that's not the case at all. If I thought Stephen was struggling, I'd be the first person to say he's struggling. But I always felt it was always going to take time. And the way it's played out this campaign hasn't surprised me in the slightest. Because when you think of where he was starting from, what he was trying to implement, what he was trying to overhaul in terms of a squad and players, bringing new players into the squad, the introduction of all those young players that he obviously dealt with at 21s, it was always going to take time. Then you factor in the COVID issues, injuries, all sorts of contributing factors. And that's what kind of amazes me when you hear people, and I know I was only joking earlier about maybe dinosaurs or people, everyone's entitled to their own view and opinion, but that's what amazed me about people's view, in the sense that how you can't see all these factors at play before you make an honest assessment of Stephen. So I'm quite happy with the way the campaign has played out. As you said, we finished it really strong. You look at them now, there's a shape on the team. There's so much to be optimistic about. The young players that have emerged. And I would judge Stephen then on the Euros next year. And I think we're in a much better place in terms of trying to qualify than what we ever were in this World Cup. But that's just my tuppence worth. We're going to speak to Stevie O'Donnell. Obviously, Stevie played with Stephen for years at Dundalk and was very successful. Rory Higgins, who was part of the team at the start of the campaign, who'll be able to fill us in on a lot of maybe the stuff that was going on behind the scenes. And obviously, Tim Clancy as well, and get their view. So no better time to bring the boys on stage. Stevie O'Donnell, Pat's manager. Rory Higgins, Derry City's manager. And Tim Clancy, Drogheda United's manager.
Look at these three.
Now, these three were acting the maggot out there. Tell the people what you were doing.
They're very cool. I have to say, very cool for managers.
Are you comfy?
Dressed very
good,
well.
Good, good, good.
You might notice about the boys, Stevie wears this tracksuit on the line with this dodgy hat every week.
But I need to, Rory cover, Higgins the, I need is to cover the fucking Barnet, don't I?
Rory Higgins is another tracksuit man, and Tim, but we decided to dress them tonight because we couldn't have them wearing tracksuits here tonight. And I think they all look very well.
Don't let him talk to you like that. Give him a stick back.
It's when I'm on the line. I normally wear a tracksuit anyway, so.
I'm surprised you're not wearing a booze top.
It's funny you mentioned that. Don't get Luke started. He'd be giving out now in front. Luke's a big Shamrock Rovers man, aren't you, Luke?
We're your big boss man.
It seems to be a bit Pat's heavy, is it? Stevie got a big, a rousing reception every day coming in.
Yeah, but we're here in force. Yeah, Gary Kern, I see there.
Gary Kern, look.
Legend, former teammate, legend.
Yeah, but will he be shouting? Will he be shouting as loud as that next week when Bo's battered him in the cup? But lads, it's great to have you. Obviously, the reason, I suppose, the live show, we mentioned that, but the fact that three up-and-coming managers, as I mentioned, Irish football at the moment, it looks like things are turning. We've been involved for a long time, playing, and obviously yourselves playing as well, and managers. But the fact that you're three up-and-coming managers now, involved in the league, doing very well. It's quite rare that you get three managers, even on a panel, who you could actually say, relative to your budgets and stuff, that you've all done very well. Obviously, Stevie, second in the league and a cup final.
Are we going to talk about Higgins' budget next year?
Oh, we'll talk about Higgins' budget next year. Don't worry.
Just jealous.
For anyone that doesn't know.
This is where Higgins stays quiet now, look. Here, Al. He's
jealous, Rory.
He dropped 50 quid out there and he said, fuck it, I'm not going to risk me back with all the money in Derry next year.
Money bags, Higgins, money bags. Actually, if you're lucky enough, he'll probably try and sign a few of you on the way out as well. He's signing everyone else. But to be fair, lads, on a serious note, we mentioned the fact that Stephen Kenny, it's the hot topic at the moment in terms of the contract. Stephen, we'll kick it off with you first. Huge success at Dundalk. Transformed your career after the story you told us about Michael O'Neill outside. But yeah, in terms of Stephen and the contract, any issues for you?
No, like, it's all expectation in regards, what do the Irish public, like especially the soccer supporters, what do they expect from the Ireland national team? I thought it got to a point where even if we qualified for tournaments like we did in 16, did we play great football? I suppose we had the big excitement of Robbie Brady's goal against Italy. But I think previous tournaments, well, I remember growing up, well, 1990 was a little bit before, but 94 we were competitive, we were fucking very good. 2002 we were very good. It was the whole buzz. But then it got to a stage where I think it was 12, we were in Croatia, Spain. Like, it wasn't even enjoyable. You were more looking forward to other games and, you know, competitive games in tournaments where I thought there was going to come a stage where we had to sort of reboot the whole thing. And to be fair to Stephen, he's come in with that mentality, I think, of we're going to have to start somewhere now and start, let's get in with an attempt to play football and let's blood youngsters and let's build for the future. So, like, I think if you can't see any promise in regards, say, the last calendar year of the football we've played and, you know, the youngsters getting blooded.
You're blind.
Yeah, and there's agendas, obviously, everywhere as well in regards people's opinions, etc. Stephen, I think probably most of us in the room are probably League of Ireland people, and people do look down their nose on the League of Ireland. So Stephen's pedigree coming through the League of Ireland in the main, straight away he's probably against the ropes in regards to the synopsis of, or the opinions of lads that have had all their career cross-channel, etc. So I think there's a little bit of that in it as well. But I'm delighted for him. I don't think he got any luck in regards to COVID, etc. At the start of his tenure, all different types of things. Remember Conor Horan's missing the playoff against Slovakia. There's so many things where it's a fine margin. But I'm delighted now it seems to be flicking a little bit. There's a feel-good factor now. Little break again on Sunday in regards to disallowed goal against Luxembourg. Little things that weren't happening for him are now happening for him. We go on and win the game comfortably 3-0. And I'd say Sunday night's probably the first time where he's maybe sat back after a game, an Ireland match, and he's felt like, I can be sort of content and maybe really try and eye and build for the future. And there's optimism and there's positivity. And I think the crowd in Luxembourg were fully behind him. So I'm delighted from that behalf. And one thing that can never be held against him, I actually texted after the last window to him, was he's got big fucking balls in regards to the teams he picks, the players he
knows. Did you text him that? Actual big balls, sorry.
Literally and fucking thing, yeah. I've seen him in the shower a couple of times, you fucking big balls. But he does, and he never shirked the issue, and he never went conservative. Never went conservative. He always stayed to what he believed.
And off the back of, I suppose, the success with Dundalk and being in a dressing room with him, was that the case the whole way through?
Yeah, like you'd play in European games and you'd know you're playing against Zenit St. Petersburg and Alkmaar or whoever it is, but he'd have instilled into you, like, we're Dundalk, you're all fucking good players in your own right. And
is that his biggest strength, Stevie?
Yeah,
people talk about the man management.
He's a dreamer. Like, he genuinely
he is, isn't he? Yeah.
In regards, he doesn't see a ceiling for teams. Like, when you think of where Dundalk came from when he took over, I remember I met him first. I was about to retire from football. Some lads in here would say, fuck it, rightly so. But I was. And he said, Dundalk's a big football town. Football's first. If you get it sort of half decent, you'll get the get a big crowd, you get the support. He said there's a big thing to be built there. And he built it gradually. And then from 2013 to where it was, then 16, we're in the Europa League group stages. And being competitive, expressing ourselves in regards playing Zenit, playing Alkmaar. And, but he'd have lads going out, like, of that I've only ever played in the League of Ireland, you know, and I've watched Zenit and watched Alkmaar on TV against Inter. He'd have lads going out with that dressing room when the whistle goes or the bell goes in the dressing room, believing, like, we're going to take these on toe for toe and we're going to beat them. And you can see through a manager if he's saying one thing and he's like he's not really believing it. But the reason lads were going out like that was because we felt he fucking believes in us, you know. And
so you, we'll get to you as a manager later on, but are you a dreamer?
Yeah, no, he's not.
I'd probably be in my head a little bit more.
You have to be, don't you?
You do to a certain extent. Everyone lies, like, thinking and dreaming and laying out their career or whatever when you were a player. What level, geez, what level could I get to? You know, we've all done it, like, you know.
Yeah, but believing it.
Yeah, like, well, if I took the Dundalk job in 2013, I wouldn't be fucking believing that we'd be in the Europa League group stage in 2016.
Yeah.
You know, especially off the back of what he came off of Rovers not working out. That was his previous job, so... Obviously, it was in last chance saloon in regards, I'd say.
For him.
Didn't work out with Dundalk. Where'd he go next? So, like, everything he's got, like, he's fully deserved. And I'm just buzzing, even though you're an Irishman and you always want Ireland to do well. But to have that extra little bit of invested interest in it, that you know the manager, you know the way he operates, brilliant. And, like, if you can't tell me there's a bit more of a structure and there's... a bit more of a plan of trying to say even simplistic things of trying to play out and play up through without going too technical of talking bollocks through the lines and all
just
that.
Keep it simple, Steve. Yeah, keep it simple.
Because there is a lot of fucking bollocks spoken, but it's brave. Everything, even the players, Josh Cullen always making angles trying to play up through midfield. It's just brave. That's enough. Go on.
Rory, he
keep going, Stevie, please.
Well, I know, sorry, should I say, well, Higgs will...
You're hogging the microphone. Will you let us get to him?
But Rory, you've got.
He's been in there.
Exactly. So you've been involved with him as a player, as your manager, and then obviously giving you the opportunity to get Ireland. Like, I mean, can you be objective and give us an insight into the difficulties he actually had, especially in the early days of trying to develop this team and getting them to believe more in themselves?
Well, I think. First of all, and it's something that I firmly believe in, I feel that there's the biggest obstacle for me was I think there's a huge snobbery towards League of Ireland football, a massive snobbery towards it. And I think that was the biggest, I think it still is the biggest obstacle. But I think what he done with Dundalk getting into the group stages, then what he done with the 21s, he earned the right. But obviously, in camp, the first few camps, I'll just use the Wales game on the Sunday afternoon as an example. We had five positive COVID tests. The results came through about 11 o'clock the night before the game. We weren't able to inform the players fully until the Sunday morning and the game kicked off. I can't remember. It was an afternoon kickoff.
Early, yeah.
So there was a team picked, obviously, on the Saturday. Then we had to go and play on the Sunday afternoon with five changes to the team. And they were just some of the obstacles that were put in front of them. And and my opinion has never changed. I always felt he was the right man. I felt that Irish football needed a change in general. And Stephen had a clear, clear plan. And I think it was a clever appointment from the FAI. He had worked with the 21s. He knew what was coming through. And I think we're seeing the fruits of it now. But... just echoing what Stevie said, his biggest attribute is his bravery, and he literally doesn't give a shit about people's different opinions. He believes, he's tunnel visioned, he believes in a certain way of playing. I think if you look at the bigger nations that we've played, so you look at Portugal home and away, we could have easily taken 4 points from six against one of the best teams in the world. If we do, then the narrative's different. Everyone's saying, I'm giving a 4-year deal. But we were we were 5 minutes away from taking 4 points from six against Portugal. And if you're asking me, do I believe he should be given a new contract then? It's an absolute no-brainer. And you can say I'm biased, you can say I'm loyal to Stephen, you can say all those things, but I truly believe that he's the right man to take Irish football forward, and no one will tell me any different.
Tim?
Yeah, just obviously, listen, Stephen and Rory have a relationship with Stephen that goes through the years. I've never worked under Stephen, but he's the one, he's the benchmark for all managers in the League of Ireland to look at what he's achieved in regards to the success of Dundalk. Is, listen, it's phenomenal. It's probably harsh me saying about it, it's probably the best League of Ireland team there's ever been, is what he developed, and he wasn't given a Derry budget next year.
I'm going to put this to bed very, very fucking soon.
No, Stephen, in fairness, he went into Dundalk and he didn't have that budget, so the budget that
We'll get to Derry in a minute, Rory. We'll get to Derry.
Fucking managers, you're worse than racing car drivers. Excuses.
But, these two pricks.
So, in fairness, the budget that Dundalk ended up with was hard earned by Stephen, and it was a budget that was increased each year with success that Stephen brought. And I think the biggest point that Stephen made since he's got the senior job with the national team is he came under a lot of criticism and maybe questioning people, unfairly questioning what was happening. But there was a press conference where he mentioned, I think it was, he said, we can continue going on the way we have been for the last 2 decades or 3 decades of beating the teams we're expected to beat and getting no closer to the ones that are ahead of us. Or we can continue the process of developing and improving, and maybe we can dream and beat the teams that are ahead of us. And I think you're starting to see that now, that at the end of this campaign, the results, as Higgy said there, bar probably the greatest ever goal scorer in Ronaldo scoring 2 goals in the last 5 minutes in the game, we've come out the wrong end of maybe 4 points out of 2 games rather than the 1 point. And it would have put us in a hell of a lot different position. And as Stevie said, the progress you've seen over the last, especially the last maybe 4 international windows, has been massive. And I think, again, it's an absolute no-brainer to extend the contract.
2 questions there, Tim, that strike me. Higgy mentioned about a snobbery to the league here, and we've all kind of felt it over the years. Hopefully, slowly, that's changing. But whatever about England snobbery and the levels there, and we're not trying to compete with that, but in terms of you spent years and years in Scotland, did you feel even that, and that's like, we're not aspiring to be the Premier League by any means, but when you look at a league like Scotland, and obviously it's ahead of us, but did you even sense there was a snobbery towards the league, even from the Scottish people?
Not really a snobbery, no, but like, you got to look at, there's teams in the league, I played at Motherwell, I played at Kilmarnock, their budgets would be less than Shamrock Rovers, like.
So it's back to Shamrock Rovers, but see, Luke, no, that's why you're winning everything.
But I'm talking in regards to, like, Rovers now are the benchmark for the League of Ireland because they've won the league the last 2 years, and it was Dundalk before that. But, like, there's clubs in Scotland that are operating. I spoke to someone today from Motherwell that they were saying that they're trying to find the next Jamie McGrath before he becomes a full international. And their thought process in signing Ross Tierney is, let's get Ross Tierney over. He showed a lot of promise in this league, and they're hoping that they can turn him into the player that they bounce like 2 years' time and sell him on for a lot of money, a lot of profit. And that's where they're looking at the League of Ireland now as a huge market for them to go shopping. Again, there's the Brexit issue that has sort of changed the scenario in Scotland, that they can't now go and get French kids or maybe kids from Holland or wherever else, where our market now is huge. And the benefit of the League of Ireland is they're not going over as kids, they're going over as first team experienced players, and the level over here is very similar to Scotland, that teams try and play football. There's very few teams in the league that will just try and lump the ball. They try and pass it. You get technically very good players in the league, and that's what Scotland's like as well, and they're hoping that they can get them technical players, and then they know their position in regards to UK football, that they sell them on to England then.
The three of you, obviously similar to myself, we went away young, 15, 16, to English clubs, but now you're in a position where you see it changing in terms of being managers of the league. in the league, and you have a lot of young lads playing, obviously Stephen with Dara Burns and McGonagall and the likes of Killian Phillips, or young lads like that who there's a bit of talk about that maybe potentially could go away. Has your view changed in terms of, mine certainly has. I went away at 15, 16 and it was kind of a no-brainer, no choice back then, because the league didn't have the structures or in terms of the underage stuff or anything like that. What's your viewpoint now in terms of being away yourselves and had that experience, but now your manager's in the league here where it's slowly but surely changing, and young lads, as Tim says, with the Brexit thing, but there's an opportunity to hit, play here maybe 19, 20 and go into a first team environment in England if you're good enough to go away?
Well, I'll jump in here, and I think Tim's saying about Ross Tierney leaving Bohemians to go to Motherwell. I think for us to really, really be taken serious as a league, that needs to stop. If Ross Tierney's leaving...
Just because you want to sign for Derry.
Nope. Do you think he needs to stay, Rory, or better fee?
Well,
or
if you're going to leave Bohemians or Shamrock Rovers or St Pat's or Derry or Drogheda, you want them going to a Celtic, or you want them going to a Championship club. I don't think... For us to be really taken serious as a league then... I don't think we can be losing our players to go from Bohemians to Motherwell. That's just my view. And then just on your question, like statistically, if you look at just using Derry City as an example, so James McLean left at, he had 70, 80 games under his belt at Derry and then he went and was a success. Stephen McLaughlin, the same, went and was a success. Paddy McCourt had to come back to go again. Danny Lafferty had to come back to go again. So I think statistically and history would suggest that if you're going to have a sustained career in England, this doesn't go across the board, but I just think...
No, well, the exceptions will always come
through. There's always an exception.
And that's
fine.
But I think... I agree with you in the sense that that's where my viewpoint has changed.
I think the most successful players that have gone into Stevens, Wardy's mate...
Wardy, that's your first mention, Wardy.
All right.
You'll be getting, plenty of more, believe me.
And the but the Seamus Coleman, the list goes on. I think statistically, if you stay here and play your trade and you get 70, 80, 100 games under your belt, then I think you're a man going to England and you're ready for it rather than sort of, you're a number when you're a kid.
Yeah, but there's that side of it as well where also, listen, when we were younger, it was a dream to be a professional footballer. There's parents now that think it's a career move. It's a genuine career path for their child to go into. And there's massive pressure put on the children. My daughter's after going to Queen's University this year. And if she turned around and said to me, listen, I'm going to go do a 3-year apprenticeship or degree and have a 2% chance of getting a job long term in that industry, I'd say, give your head a wobble, like, the fuck are you doing? But that's what we're doing with our best young kids in this country at 15, 16, sending them off to England. And 2% of them are making it and staying over there. And I think even of the 2% that stay over there, for 10 years, for someone to have a long-term career, you'll see the likes of Kenny at the back there, you'll see Damien Duff, you'll see Robbie Keane, Richard Dunn. They're the minute, little, small, tiny numbers. But we have a 75% of them kids are coming back and not playing football. Our best kids at 15, 16, a lot of them aren't even playing League of Ireland because there might be that little snobbery where they say, I'll come back and I'll play for Shamrock Rovers or Dundalk or Derry, and they come back to Derry and realise, fuck me, I'm about to get another knock. I wasn't good enough for Sheffield Wednesday or
they struggle to even get into it.
Back and they think, that's grand, I'll come back and I'll play for one of the League of Ireland clubs, and then they think to themselves, I can't even get a game for these. Then there's a second bounce after a knock after their whole life from 6 years of age to 16 to 18 to 19 get released in England. That's the first bit of bad news they've ever heard. Then they come back and within 6 months they realise, I'm not even ready to play League of Ireland. Then they stop playing football. So more's the point is, the ones that stay in the league...
But surely, Tim, now with the underage setup and structures that we have, it can only be a positive for that change, and that's the only way it'll change.
It will, but I think there has to be more avenues in regards to the UCD model, where the best players in the league you see for the last lot of years, like when you see them, that they go through UCD, they get their degree, and then their worries of life after football is out the window.
Does that appeal to the parents then?
It should appeal to the parents.
How important are the parents in a 13, 14, 15-year-old's decision-making? Are they key or... I mean, I don't know if you guys have experienced that. I don't know what the answer is. Like you mentioned those percentages to me. Not news to me. It was like that when I was a kid. I think we all know that that the percentage of players that make it in England is less than 1%. How do you convince these kids that there's a career here, and if they take the career here, they have a better opportunity?
Well, Brexit's going to be huge, isn't it?
Yeah.
Brexit actually takes the decision.
But can we depend on Brexit, I wonder? Is it a psychology?
Well, how I think, as Al said, I went to Arsenal when I was 15. My mindset is you either stay, go to Arsenal when you're 15, or you stay and do your leaving cert and train twice a week with Newcastle United, my schoolboy team in Galway, whereas the ship would have sailed by then, because I would have been miles off it by the time I'm 18, finished my leaving cert. The pathways now are getting better, all right, more hands-on regards the League of Ireland schoolboy teams. It's becoming more like what you'd see in an academy when you'd go, if you'd go over a 15 and 16. So the pathway is getting better. Still a long way to go, but definitely it is improving in that regard. And ultimately, when you just break it down, 15-year-olds, all right, what are you like physically? What's the scope? What are you going to turn into when you're 18, 19, when it's time to actually make money and have a career and play first team at 19 or so? You could be an absolute... For instance, when I went at 15, I was actually skinny and quite tallish for my age. When I was 19... Well, huh?
What are you saying you look like now?
When I was 19, I was short and stumpy. So it's a totally different specimen. So, you know, you, as Higgs said, he went through the list of players. It's no coincidence. Clubs can come over and watch a 19-year-old play first-team football in front of a crowd, play for points, and say, right, we have a plan for him. We can see the potential. Rather than sign a 15-year-old playing under 15s or under 16s, that could be a totally different physical specimen at 19, 20.
Stevie, in terms of, I suppose, with yourselves, and it's obviously the first team is your major concern, but because the dynamic is changing now with the underage structure, so with the obviously the National League setup, how informed are ye, or do you get involved in the conversations maybe with lads at 15, 16, 17, or is there an academy director saying,
if you try to do everything...
But is there's conversations happening?
Conversations, yeah, there is. Of course there is, and of potential players that in a couple of years down the line. So I'll say from my instance in regards young players, say we have Dara Burns and Ben McCormack this season, who are young players... We went with a tight squad, like this season in regards to budget, etc. You had to take a chance of going with a tight squad, and then I included them two as first-team players for this season. So they weren't being included of, we'll have a first-team squad, and then two young boys, but they were actually included. So you got to know, you got to earmark, you got to have, if I'm going to be a little bit short on numbers, you got to earmark young players that potentially are going to be first-team players. So you have
but Burns was a no-brainer, was he?
He was. Now, would you have said, what I've said at the start of the season, he's going to have the impact he's had this season? You couldn't bank on it, you know what I mean? It's hard to tell with any young players. But there definitely does need to be ID on players from, I would say, under 15, 16 up. You know, you don't know how you get them in training with first team lads. 16-year-olds, we've had a couple of 16-year-old boys in with us most days whenever their education and that can comply with it. So... definitely you need to have your finger on the pulse, especially as I said, if you're working off sort of tight squads, you gotta always have an idea in your head of the next young batch coming through and who potentially could have an impact in your first team squad in the coming season or the next season.
I was going to ask Rory, because maybe the dynamic might be a little bit different. Derry, you know, big club, big city. Like, do you see that with younger kids coming through, that wanting to go to England, or is the dynamic different for you?
It's a good point. I think and Derry, Dundalk, Cork, Sligo, where there's one club, Alan, you'll know you're from Sligo. You actually see just as much Derry City tops as you see Man United tops or whatever.
Right.
So I think it's probably slightly different. A lot of kids, there's one or two exceptional ones now at Derry at the minute, where 14, 15, 16, and we're not going to hold on to them because they're really top bracket. But
them ones will always come true, won't they? That's what I mean about the exception. So you don't mind that?
No, of course, and it's hard to tell a young lad, don't go to Man City or don't go to Chelsea and stay and play for Derry. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It's hard, but I think you can stop ones going the
League One, League Two. I think that has to be our SPL, unless it's the big one. I think we have to be in a position in the coming years to try and compete with that. And I think we're not doing our job properly if we can't. That's the way I look at it. And it's up to us as clubs. They put a plan in place. They put a program in place where these kids are happy to stay here. And it's their aspiration to try and get into the Derry City first team or the Sligo first team or whoever.
Anyone in the audience want to come in there? Hand up there. Yeah.
Facilities, yeah.
That's it. But you're watching the stuff on the pitch and you're like, especially Dundee, like you say, their budget's probably next year. Because so often gone chase.
It was in Edinburgh. It was Hearts were home, wasn't it?
Yeah. It's funny you say that, because that was always my viewpoint on the cup final. When we cover the cup final and when it's in the Aviva Stadium, I always had this theory in my head that if you put Crystal Palace and West Brom into Bose and Pat's jerseys and didn't tell anybody in the ground, but put them into the environment of the Aviva Stadium and go out and play a match and nobody knows, you wouldn't actually be thinking they're Premier League players. So when we actually get, say for example next week we've Pat's and Bose in the final, the cup finals are absolutely unbelievable occasions, because I would agree with that. What's your name?
Edward.
As Edward said, like, and that's such a stickler for us. You can talk about the underage structures and another changing and the first teams and it's getting better and there's pause. The facilities are an absolute disgrace in this country
That's the one I was talking about there, Al, is now, the facilities.
Don't come in on your ground.
No. Well, Hasten, I'll be honest. You wouldn't know if you've not been in it this fucking year, you cunt, you.
I'm too busy at Daily Mount.
That's the whole point of it is... Like, I know that what Ed was saying there in regards to the standard of football and the players within the jerseys, but the difference is Hearts have a stadium, they're selling 18,000 tickets every week. Yeah. And I know
they have an industry, Tim.
It is an industry. Like, their training ground at Riccarton's, the indoor arena and everything else, and Hibs have a training facility that's worth probably £7 million. It's as good as you'll get in a lot of Premier League clubs in England. We don't have that at the minute. And I know what Higgy's saying is don't lose our players to the SPL. But then you'll have Ross Tierney will say to himself, well, if I do one good season in the SPL, like Jamie McGrath, has he improved that much since he's gone to St Mirren and he was at Dundalk? Probably not.
But he's doing it in a place where he's showcasing.
Now it puts him into a picture where he's in games where he's playing against 50, 60,000 fans in stadiums and he's comfortable in that arena. And from the back of St Mirren, which will have a smaller budget than Dundalk, he'll get a way bigger move than he could have off the back of
Dundalk. Is that fair, Rory?
Rory.
No, well, I was just back to Ed's point. The game that springs to mind where I was so glad that it was... I was assistant manager at Dundalk, right? And it was in Talla Stadium. I was so glad that it was in Talla because even though we lost that night, there was seven... It was just before COVID. There were 7,000 people in the stadium and it was an unbelievable game of football.
Flores goal, is that match?
And Jack Byrne, I think, got two maybe that night. Yeah. But it was on television as well. And I think that night, and then COVID came, and the league was gathering momentum, and then COVID came. But if that match had been played...
In Hunky Dory Park.
Well, Al, all jokes aside, as he said,
Dundalk is the worst league in the country.
Tim, do you want to come over and punch him?
It's grand.
Sure?
One of your mates, Liam Burt, scored from the halfway line against us. You couldn't see the ball getting into the goal because the net is the same colour as the wall behind the goal. And it's actually killed the goal. He scored from the halfway line. But that's what Higgy's saying. What Higgy's saying. He's saying that the fact that game and the quality of football in that game, a sellout against Rovers Dundalk, that quality of goal should have got the Puskás Award. And it's the optics of it on the telly, that's how we progress our league. But we can't do it when we only got one stadium in the country. Derry's a good stadium.
I know we all say it's an industry elsewhere, right? But we need to nail it down to what we need to start doing.
What's one thing we need?
Stadiums.
How much money is the government putting in the Irish football?
Good point.
What are they putting in the horse racing? What are they putting in the GAA? Yeah.
Okay.
What are they putting
that's
in the R
league? Thing. Like the Celtic Tiger and all that, we've been let down League of Ireland, by League of Ireland football specifically, by the government. Like, we used to go away pre-season tournaments now when you're in England, go to Holland, Belgium, and the amount of 6,000, 7,000, 8,000 all-seater stadiums you used to have, and you played the little games there, and that. Like, we haven't got one in Ireland, you know, for all the money we had and that, et cetera, you know. That's all it takes, and optics is huge. How are you going to get a neutral to tune in a game on RT? Obviously, RT probably have to vary, you know, divvy the games up and that, and to show a game from maybe not Tallaght Stadium, et cetera. Someone flicks on the telly, like, after 2 minutes, you have a neutral that's on the fence. I'll give this a shot, whatever game, from one of the poorer grounds in the league. It's gone after 2 minutes.
I know we're laughing and joking about the budget side of things with Rory, right? And you can tell us exactly how much it is to spend next year.
Tim's made some excellent points there that people probably wouldn't realise. There's big clubs in Scotland have lesser budgets than some of the teams here. But what they have is stadiums, training facilities.
They've built that over a number of years, Stu, and in an industry that we're clamouring to get. And we've been trying to get, like Rory's point, fair enough, about Motherwell, but I'd agree with him. He's a much better opportunity, as much as it pains me to say right now, and I love Ross Tierney, but if he goes and performs at Motherwell, he'll end up getting a bigger move rather than if he's performing at Bowes now. He's only going to a Motherwell rather than going to a bigger club straight off.
It's depth. It's more depth in the SPL in regards standard of player, standard of facility, standard of stadium, standard of club. That's what I'm saying.
I don't want it to sound negative because... As I'm saying, it's about in terms of there is positive change happening, but because it's been neglected for so long, we're playing catch-up. We're 25 years.
Well, we'll still be playing catch-up in 20 years unless we start today.
But that's what I'm saying. We are starting today.
That's what I mean. There has to be better infrastructure put in place. We've been saying this for how many years?
Well, we are starting.
We were talking about it backstage. Damien Duff's massive.
Yeah.
All right. In regards profile of a person that's come into the league at the start of his coaching career. Damien Duff, he's standalone, all right? So he's huge, all right? And Stephen Kenny's huge. Because if Stephen Kenny does well in the international scene with Ireland and his whole background pretty much is League of Ireland, all of a sudden it gets credibility.
In terms of managers, right, because people often say this when they look at the league and say it gives hope for League of Ireland managers that they can go on and be the national team. And we were joking earlier about you being a dreamer or any of the managers. Does it genuinely give you hope when you see Stephen performing or getting the opportunity? As three young up-and-coming managers, do you look at that and think, or have dreams or aspirations to maybe one day you can achieve that?
You do, right? But you also have to be realistic. Like, the lifespan now of managers is shocking. So my hope is that I won on Friday night, and I'm not going to lie. I can't look... that's me as a person... I struggle to look past Friday night. Obviously, if you plan for next season and the season after, but your main focus for that week is trying to win on Friday night. And I have to be brutally honest.
You bring up a point there. I was actually going to ask the trees, because when I look at the trees, I see three players. I do. I see you as players because I played against you.
That's debatable.
What I was going to ask you
probably
is...
Probably skinnier now than it was me last season of Bray.
So what I was going to ask you is that transition to a manager, and Treeds, you can all give it. Tim, I got you first, right? How have you found it? Do you still think of yourself as a player, or have you fully transformed, or what are even the difficulties?
Yeah, well, listen, I'm 4 years out of playing now, so it was hard. I remember Kev at the start. They asked me to win.
Kev here.
Kev's there. He's up there at the back.
He's a wave, Kev.
Midway through.
Yeah.
The fella beside him there is all battered.
If ever I saw a Kev wave,
that's a Kev wave.
Yeah.
What kind of a wave is that? Will you give us a proper wave?
Who's up the Johnny all busted and bruised.
Johnny. The enemy is here tonight as well, Johnny Ward. Out, Johnny, out.
But no, I can remember stepping away and I thought to myself that I was 33 when I stopped playing. I could have still probably played on, I could have, but I thought I have to put all focus into it. As Higgy said, the lifespan of a manager, you have to plan because it could be a career. You don't have 10, 15 years as a player where you're physically able to do what you could do for maybe 30 years as a manager. So you have to put everything into it.
That's why you can be fat as a manager.
Well, you can be, but you also have to make the right decisions and not rush into that. But you have to be realistic that you have a bad month and you're under pressure. So,
how tough is that, Tim, honestly? Because you're working, tell the people, you work night shifts and... and part-time job, and then you're obviously going in and doing things with Drogheda. And I think one of the questions come in, someone mentioned manager of the year, but in terms of what you're doing with the budget... Well, no, but just in terms of, like, we're on about earlier with Stephen, the contributing factors to things, they have huge, massive budgets compared to you. So when you think of... But seriously... Well, tell us the budget at Derry City for next year.
$1 million. Honestly, and I'm not kidding. When I was a player, right?
No, it's not about players. Next year. Never mind, you're a player. Next year.
No, I'm talking about in general, right? I hated when other managers reference other teams' budgets. I absolutely hate it.
That won't cut it.
Honestly, I hope you never have to pull me up on that someday.
I'll back you up on that. I back him up on that.
I absolutely hate
fucking excuses. Fucking every manager in the world is an excuse.
Oh, shoot, there's a big difference.
You know
in
what I hate?
Budget,
you know what I hate? When you're trying to keep a player and they say, well, fuck it, Derry are offering me twice as much. That's what I really hate.
Yeah, you're not like...
I wish Philip O'Doherty was here, to be honest. I wish he was here.
Tim's budget compares to big clubs and what he's doing. That's all relative and it has to be brought into consideration.
The other side of things as well is I can go and offer...
Bulls have a tiny budget, don't they?
Bulls are doing well.
Yeah. The wee part-time club.
Bulls are flying. Bulls will be all right.
But in fairness... In fairness, Al, though, what we can sort of do is we can offer players a shorter route into the first team than Derry or Pats or Rovers, Bows, whatever it is with bigger budgets. I can name another 10 clubs, even in the first division with a bigger budget. But still, right?
Manager of the year.
Anyway, no, but what I'm saying, Al, is we've got to then play to an audience where the pressure on them lads, because he has to win the league next year. So he's not going to play a young lad next year where we might be able to play a young lad in the first team.
Well, now that you're talking about players, we have a question in from Keith Fitzsimons.
Do a fucking iPad.
From the Irish Footy. Very posh, aren't they? Kyle, you don't see this on the League of Ireland pod, Johnny, do you?
Sky Sports at the back there, having a look at it.
But for Tim, yeah. So Tim, obviously you're mentioning the players and giving them opportunities at that level. Have you been surprised how easily the likes of Brown, Doyle, Kane and et cetera have stepped up to the Premier Division? And how good is Killian Phillips?
No, I've not really been surprised. The attributes that Jimmy and Doyle and Connor Kane and that have, they're athletically very good. And you've got to respect the level of the Premier Division is a lot higher than the First Division, but they're quite good players in the First Division as well and very, very experienced for the age that they're at. Like, I think Doyle, Connor and Jimmy have probably played over 150 games each and they're 22 or 23 years of age, so they have a lot of experience. My job this year was to try and get in a few other players that would bring the best out of them then, which I think we've done with Gary Deegan and Dane Massey and Dinny Corker and Ronan Murray, Dan O'Reilly, a few more of experienced ones.
They all play for free.
How good has Deegan been for you?
Deegan has been brilliant.
I think it was Shane Kennedy asked just about that. Shane wants an old school microphone, but sorry, Shane.
Yeah.
Gary Deegan.
I played with Gary over in at Hibs, and I know exactly what he's like. Deegs is a bit of a madman, but
we loved him on the podcast.
When you control him in the right way, like he's got everything he wants to do properly. So it's just putting the leash on him and saying like, just calm down. Like,
why does he eat rabbit food?
I don't know.
Does anyone follow him on Instagram, Deegs? Some character.
He does the Wim Hof breathing and all that. And whatever.
Brilliant. He was brilliant on the podcast.
He's 34 or 35 years of age and there's about 4% body fat on him. And he really looks after himself. So, but he's been excellent in regards to how himself, Ronan Murray, to come in and the prehab and stuff that maybe the part-time lads at Drogheda would never have seen before. They're coming in 45 minutes before the sessions and they're doing all their activation stuff and after training doing the cool-downs and stuff that lads wouldn't be used to. And it sort of has brought the younger lads on, and that's why the likes of Stevie's trying to sign half my team. Like, so
Stevie, a question for you. It appears you've created a great atmosphere at Richmond Park. There's a real bond with the fans and the team. Do you feel the Pat's dressing room is now similar to the dressing room you had at Dundalk?
Yeah, obviously all these things take time. We're at Dundalk, it didn't happen all of a sudden either in regards to first year, all of a sudden a great atmosphere. amongst each other and with the fans. It takes time building these things, but it's something that is, it is massive. If you can get a bond between supporters and the players, and you know we've had it this year, you're always going to be under the cosh at different stages and matches. And if you have a group of supporters that don't turn on the players and you know get on them and make them a little bit edgy and keep supporting them, it's massive for a team and riding out those tricky little periods and matches. So there seems to be, our home record's very good. Obviously, I'd like our away record to be a lot better, but our home record's very good. So that always helps. And I think the main thing I wanted to instill was Pats fans, when they come and watch Pats, or if they travel and watch Pats, they have no doubt that, look, might not have been our night, but they tried their fucking best, all right? They tried their damnedest, they tried their hardest, and we're not going away thinking there's three or four lads out there that, you know, they don't give a shite if they win or lose. So that was the biggest
At the
thing.
Start of the season, I would have said Pats would have been challenged for Europe, would have been a realistic target for me. It was only your first full season putting your stamp on things. And I've said many times over the commentary or whatever that I think you've overachieved finishing second. And people are saying, really? They haven't overachieved. I actually think you have, and you've done a I'm not just blowing smoke up that backside of yours, but to get to a cup final as well.
I was rambling home with our, like, when was the last time, I'm not praising myself, but I'm just saying from regards...
Which are praising
2013, Pats won the league. Realistically, they haven't been cited since. All right, they won the cup in 14. They haven't been cited since as regards a challenger or regards on people's thoughts of going to win. So when we came in, Pats, you know, they're a prestigious club. They have great history. I never had it was probably one of the few clubs I didn't play for. So I never, it was one of the few clubs that I didn't have an affinity with. And I'm sure a lot of supporters would have think, fucking Stephen, you know, novice manager, straight from playing, going to a club where you don't probably have a history there. What's going on here? So my main thing was, and I said it even to the boys that we had that are still here, that were there, you know, when they were successful and being there through probably the lean years of not challenging, let's get back in the forefront of people's minds in regards when they're talking about who could win the cup or who could be there challenging in the league, who could be a dark horse, that we're there, we're on the tips of people's tongues.
Forrester said that today, he was in with us, and I love Forrester, we actually fell in love. I'm not sure what people think, but
were you going to say we actually fell in love?
I did, John.
Yeah, I fell in love with Chris Forrester, and I don't mind saying it, I fell in love with the lad the day he was on the podcast. And the reason being, people should listen to it, because he's so vulnerable, and I hope you have listened to it, because he was so vulnerable, he was so honest, he was so... People go and watch Chris Forrester, and we've all done it, and people make perceptions of people without even knowing them. The lad was absolutely incredible the day he came on our podcast, and I only loved him as a footballer, because that's all I could go on beforehand. Getting to know him for that hour... He was unbelievable.
He was amazing. He was incredible. So honest and spoke extremely well, yeah. I didn't fall in love with him now, but I just respected him for the person that he is.
He was. And Stevie, in terms of, as I say, people, we all go to grounds, and particularly Luke, he'd be slating fellas and slating players and all sorts. But you go to grounds and you go to matches, and obviously you don't know the players as such. It was lovely to see a different side of him. And I'm sure with you're at close quarters with him. You see them. You see the human side of them. People go and they give out about player, and I've no problem with that, a bit of stick and a bit of banter, and perhaps we've all done it, and that's fine. But people made a perception, I think, of Chris Forrester without even knowing the lad. And I probably did as well, not giving out about him, but just purely as a footballer. He blew me away the day he came in. He was absolutely unbelievable in just the way he conducted himself, the way he came in, his mannerisms, everything about him, what he was willing to say. He spoke highly of yourself in the dressing room and all, but just him as an individual, I thought this lad is fucking unbelievable.
Yeah, well, Chris, as an example, he's very intelligent. You know, as I was saying backstage, see, we don't play quizzes on the way down to away games and that, and general knowledge, all that type of stuff, is emotionally very intelligent. And usually, probably football and life and that is a little bit harder for lads that are emotionally intelligent, and that you get some lads that life is just black and white. They have actually easier lives because they're a little bit dim. So it's just black and white. There's no thinking involved. Whereas I would actually
why is he pointing at you?
I totally get that.
No, what I would say is I'd one of Higgs's new signings for next season. I actually think they're very similar. They're both unbelievably gifted. Patrick McIlhenny They're both similar. They're both similar. They're both unbelievably talented. They're both emotionally very intelligent. They're absolutely sharp as a tack. Nothing gets by them without taking stuff on board. They recognise and they take things on board and they see little different things and they love football. And these type of players, these Mavericks, as you said, it's easy to have a different sort of perception of them, but you know they're actually the most intriguing ones. And then you have to work your way out with Chris. He obviously came back from Scotland, but he was at Peterborough, went over, was flying. I think he was made captain. Darren McAnthony wanted to sell him for $4 million. Then hit a little bit of a lull, then went to Scotland, it didn't work out, went to Aberdeen, came back to Pats. Probably motivation-wise, I've had my stint in Britain, come back, this is me. Maybe found it hard to motivate himself. Fair to say, it didn't probably light it up when he came back to Pats. So that was a job in regards, what makes him tick, what can you challenge him with, and then try and get that little bit of, I don't know what you'd call it, the eye of the tiger back in regards to show people, I have full belief in you. You know what I mean? Go and just express yourself and show what you can do.
Yeah, he was unbelievable. But we're kind of running out of time in this half of the show. So there's two or three other questions I wanted to ask the boys. But before that, Rory, I know, we're having a crack about the budget and stuff, but it must be exciting to bring back the likes of McElhenney and Duffy.
It is. What people aren't getting here is that, and I just want to put this on record, by the way. All right. No, I want to put this on
record.
You want
to stand up and say it?
No, I'm fine. I'm fine, Ram. But, so when my very first conversation with Philip O'Doherty was, this plan was always in place, right? So regardless of him selling his business a month, that has had no relevance on what's happening. We're very, very clear. Derry has always been a club, and I spoke about it to you two lads not that long ago. Derry has always been a club that has produced their own players, local talent, and we will continue to do that as long as they're good enough, as long as they're ready. We'll keep producing our players. But he made it very clear that if there's a few players of higher profile, and it's an obvious one, like Patrick McElhinney and Michael Duffy from Derry, if we don't go and try and sign them, then first of all, I'm not doing my job right, and the club aren't doing things right, so they were pretty obvious. We won't get into all our names, obviously, but we won't. No, listen, I'm sure there'll be plenty ahead of us in the list, but no, it would be stupid if we didn't go on it and try and bring them back to Derry. And Philip has made it very clear that the finances are there, but it will not be an open checkbook, and we'll try and live within our means. The crowds are coming back to the Brandywell, which are a massive help as well. And if we're getting 3,000-4,000 people in the gates every week, then they're entitled to come and watch the likes of McElhinney and Duffy playing.
That's fair.
For their hometown club.
No, that's fair. Tim, a couple of funny ones. So Owen Doyle sent in a message. Are you the best player that he's ever played with? And if you say no, he's going to share the picture he has with you with the whole country.
Yeah, well, Doyle is definitely the best player I've ever played with. not even a debate.
No, that's not Tim. Who's that? Who's that?
Who's that?
Wardy!
Go, Wardy!
That's the brilliant Keith Ward. Look at that. I love it. Do we love Wardy or what in the league?
Oh, absolutely, darling. Look at him.
We love Wardy. We absolutely love Wardy. And that is a young Wardy there. You look great, Wardy. You're probably the same size. Here's one for you. Well, I don't know if you want to share this, Stevie, but do you want to tell us about the trip up with Higgins to Limavady, your first trip? Paddy sent that in. Your brother.
It was so bad, he can't remember. Look.
No, I'll tell you a story about me. Oh, Jesus, in the restaurant, yeah. Fucking hell. No, but just aghast the way it works out, and we're obviously opposition managers now in the league. Higgs joined in 2014. Dundalk, and they didn't know Higgs really, just say hello to him, that playing against him. It was more than a low, probably, fucking you fat bastard. But he joined, we got on straight away, got on well. I was living in Dublin at the time, travelling up in the evenings to Dundalk. We had a little carpool with little Wardy and that. And the next year, Higgs goes, why don't you, like, you're paying rent in Dublin, why don't you fucking move up to Dundalk? We're staying in Diggs with, we're staying in a house with other lads. Higgs was staying with three or four other lads. So I said, where will I stay? And he says, stay with me. So me and Higgs for 2014, the first year we won the league, were tops and tails in the gaff in Dundalk. And that's a fact. And we used to be chatting football till... No, we were only chatting football now till 4 or 5 in the morning.
Did you fall in love?
But we'd be talking about, you know, we weren't coming to the end, but we both like love football and get into coaching and managing. And I was like, I wonder will we ever come up against each other? I wonder will we ever go manager or assistant manager? And... Well, that's the way it works out. Now he has infinite amount of money and I'm fucking struggling.
Well, I know the two of you personally, and it doesn't surprise me that you've gone into management because obviously you're very knowledgeable, but care deeply as well. The last one for you, this was sent in by an Irish international. Last question, Enda Stephen sent this in. Are you a better player than Chris Shields? Spill the beans. Huh?
Shields, he was brilliant, wasn't he, for Dundalk? He was, he's a legend, but he learnt everything he knew off fucking me, that's for sure.
Okay, we'll wrap it up there, folks. Brilliant. Lads, you've been absolutely brilliant with your time. They've been not only, obviously, coming out tonight, but they have matches on Friday, big matches as well. Obviously, Stevie's involved in the cup final next week. We wish him all the best. Rory,
for
Rory
a balance, we had Al on the couch for Bose, for a fucking Bose side of it, just for a balance.
We Wardy will do the damage in the cup, don't we, Wardy? Obviously, Rory has a huge match Friday night as well, to finish fourth, so a big match for himself, and he travelled down from Derry today, so it's greatly appreciated. And Tim as well has made the effort, so thanks a million to you all, lads.
Thank you. Cheers, guys, thanks.
Stewie's going to sing a couple of songs now, boys, so hopefully we all enjoy this. Thanks, Stewie. We're going to have a break just after this as well for 15 minutes, people. So listen to the songs and then we're going to have a break for 15 minutes and we're back with Kenny and Keith.
This is a song about our favourite wee left footer, Wes Houlihan. Inspired a song called Superstar.
Did you take it? They handed you defeat from the shadows, raw and incomplete, something special, molded from the street. Strength, something that's unique. What's the secret to the self-belief? Supersonic, you're the one we need. You hear the crowd, feel the you you're the one, the superstar. And to these children, the bed of that one's cold, filled with demons, pulling at their souls. But the story is destined to be told. Is there hope? Can it be undone? Dreams are stolen, taken by the gun. Will we ever see another one? And hear the crowd, feel the rush. Drumming to your beating pulse. And light the dying night. Anything that you do can mesmerize. And hope is what you are. Show them that you're the one, the superstar.
Thank you. This is a song I released early in the year, and it's a pure football song. It's a nostalgic song. Look back at what we love about the game, and it's probably the best environment to play. It's called The Game That We Love. I'm going to have to play it a bit loud, so... Just a game that we love. As the sun went down and the lights came on, no time to go on with the show. The shadows cast in the broken glow. Sweat on the stone, just go for gold. Like Milan in the San Siro, we would play in the rain. And even darkness and cold
and through the winter and snow. They were days I can't erase. Oh, how I wish I could go back in time and play the game that we love. It's just 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 the game that we love.
Enjoy a few drinks. See you in 50.
Thank you for listening to Cawley's Call, powered by Benetti Menswear. For more interviews like this, please subscribe to my podcast or follow on all my social media channels.